Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy, I changed it up.
There we go. I can't just edit that in and copy and paste every episode. Well,
John did say he was going to replace me completely with AI, so I'm trying to change things up occasionally so I'm not instantly gone.
If all of a sudden Brad sounds like an imposter, it's because he couldn't make it one day and I just decided to use an AI for his voice.
True story.
On today's episode, we're going to finish our coverage of the events of the Horus Heresy that fall between Istvan V and the invasion of Sol. Today, we're really focused on like the adage that chaos is inherently chaotic. Sounds lame, but it's a good way to describe it.
But it is because of the fact that right now, if you would look at it from just a planning, if you're on the war map right now, and I'm such a dork about this, and I'm thinking about every
movie you've ever seen,
every video game, when I'm looking at the table,
the shuffleboard pushing,
100%.
Yeah.
Chaos is set up for a pretty easy win, to be perfectly honest with you. But again, you aligned with the forces of chaos, not the forces of excellent planning.
And as much as chaos hates the Emperor, who else do they hate, Brad?
They hate so much more other chaos.
So we're going to discuss the kind of what happens when you let chaos run with chaos. All right, Brad, I think we start off with the Thousand Suns. So
is this a tragic story or is this just one that makes you mad? Because I don't know, maybe the Primarch's a little bit too emo.
Yeah, because Magnus is now a demon prince. And for those of just a quick recap, they decided to, after just getting their ass beat by the Space Wolves.
To which he gave up.
He wasn't even trying.
Whoa. He did not even, as much as a Space Wolf homer as I am, Leman Russ beat up a guy that wasn't really trying.
Oh, yeah. This was kind of one of those, it's like the end of Ali's career fights where you're like, can you stop hitting?
Yeah, please don't let Larry Holmes punch you in the face anymore. Sorry, non-sports fans, but that's a real
thing. But it's a real thing. So the Thousand Suns are Magnus the Demon Prince. His legion has given their entire souls to Tzeentch. We are going to cover this in another episode about all his dust and how far this goes.
There's also a lot of things going on because we had a lot of mutations because in doing that, Tzeentch, no one literally, if you've ever watched I wished for something and it went wrong, Tzeentch was right there the entire time.
For those of you who are maybe newer to this, if you've ever heard the concept of a monkey paw, where it's a monkey paw wishes, that really is Tzeentch. Tzeentch is a monkey paw where he will constantly give you a very literal translation of what you're asking for, but will then capitalize on the pieces you're not asking for.
100%.
So did Tzeentch save all the people on Prospero?
Yes.
Yes.
But also,
he took all their souls and their human bodies, and they are forever slaves.
Yeah, and also he semi-pulled your planet into the Eye of Terror, and it's also not in the Eye of Terror because why not screw with you?
Tzeentch isn't real, but I'm just going to tell you guys, if you're going to make a deal with a demon ever, really go to town on your footnotes. Like, make sure in that contract you have really scrutinized all the footnotes.
You should get Johnny Cochran to help you out.
Yeah, this is going to be hard. We got to make sure we've got all the T's crossed and I's dotted, because otherwise...
Yeah, you need some lawyers.
You're in for some shit.
So the Thousand Suns have made a shitty deal with the devil right now. And Magnus... who still, you know what? Screw you guys. Magnus did nothing wrong.
No, he did everything wrong. But you and I disagree on this. It's fine. But I'm just going with,
come on now. He's trying. He's trying, Ringo. He's trying to be the better guy.
In the worst ways possible. He consistently does it wrong.
He's a little pouty. Yeah. I mean, he's a lot of pouty. How about that?
Yeah.
But the Legion is in weirdly disarray.
Yeah.
You've got a big, I've got a chasm between Magnus, who is pulled back at this point in time. Magnus is effectively erecting the tower. He basically makes a planet-sized tower eventually. But right now, Ahriman is trying, full-on air quotes, trying poorly. And we will definitely do another episode of this because I love Ahriman. Except for the fact that the Harlequins clown him all the time. Clown, see?
Good one.
But the thing about the Thousand Suns with this is Ahriman's trying to fix the Legion. Magnus is kind of pouting about the Legion.
Yeah.
And accepting coming to terms with the fact that he is now
a demon prince.
A demon prince. Yeah. I mean, and that is really what's going on, is he's on his tower. He's, and weirdly enough, he makes the tower by just, again, because it's in the warp, he just thinks about a tower.
And he gets a tower.
Exactly. And it comes into being. And the thing is that the rest of the Legion, well, eventually they have no choice, but we'll talk about that. But the sorcerers and stuff are very conflicted, but they're just kind of going with Aramon.
Well, but someone else sold their souls. It's a weird deal to be like, I mean, if you think about it, usually you should sell your own soul. But with these guys, with the Thousand Sons, their soul was kind of sold for them. And now they're just
That's somewhere. A big thing we got to go back on, because we've talked about a little bit with the Primarchs and the fact that they're the sons, the Marines are the sons of each Primarch, but they're not just the sons. They are psychically connected.
Yeah.
They are infused. They're genetically predisposed to follow that person. So not only are they psychically connected, which is why effectively when he signed the dotted line, they were like, hey, man, remember when Dad sold our souls? And apparently I just was also part of this deal. But they kind of also are genetically predisposed to go, oh, well, I guess Dad sold my soul.
Guess I'm over here now.
Yeah. So they have like a lot of confliction on this. And the thing is that, to be perfectly honest, there's a ton of dudes left. The Space Wolves.
That's the problem. Is it at the point where they pulled the trigger and jumped into the war,
they were getting
Space Wolves were just ripped.
Prospero was done.
Yeah. I mean, and so they're kind of in a weird boat where there are the Thousand Sons are one of those super powerful, I would say, legions individually. So even though they're small in number, they can have a lot of effect, but they are very much so small in number.
This is also when the Cabal started.
Yeah.
This is when they started breaking down, and people that play 40K, Cabals are one of the things that they get as powers. This is the reason that they're really good in the game. But in lore, they started the Cabal system. They already had it a little bit lodged.
Yeah.
But they really break down into small groups of sorcerers focused together to increase their power. And the entire Legion becomes these, could be, as usual, chaos. If you got together, you could do anything you wanted, but they are definitely not getting together. There is a bunch of disparate cabals inside the Thousand Sons of different sorcerers, and they are kind of all separate, and they all hate their brother for being slightly more powerful or slightly better at this. And of course, they do the, I just met you at the dinner party, and we're going to pretend that we're not epic enemies. Oh, I'm so happy that you know how to do this.
And I would say to kind of the theme of the episode is that they are beholden to the god of, I mean, just chaos and deception. So surprise, surprise, you know, they embrace this constant levels of chaos and deception. So the Thousand Sons, they're in quite a bit of a issue. They've got their Primarch is a little bit lost mentally. They've lost the majority of their Legion, and they're trying to just figure out what they are. And by the way, they're stuck with their souls being given over to and living in the warp with the god of deception.
And it's not the neighborhood value is not great right now.
Yeah, this isn't a great situation.
So, and the thing is that I think actually the worst place, and we'll go into some of the other Legions that have fallen to chaos, is the Thousand Sons understand
what
their plight more than the other legions do. So you have a lot of people are in the dark. Something bad is happening. The Thousand Sons are fully aware of everything that's going down with them. And that's actually kind of a big deal.
Right.
Because they know that they're, hey, so I'm eternally damned and under the influence. Also, I'm not going to die either. So I'm just...
I hadn't thought about that. That's a great point. That everyone else, they feel the corruption of chaos, and it's there. But it's probably more the positive. Like, you know, if you're corrupted by Zeench, it's like, ooh, I find this stuff fun. Or Korn, actually, both of them. And then Nurgle, it's a warm feeling as you're...
Grandfather Nurgle.
As you're just decaying. But you're right. The Thousand Sons actually know.
They understand.
They're fully alert as to what's going on and their powerlessness to it.
They're literally infused. They're the most powerful they've ever been and the most powerless they've ever been. Ooh, right. Philosopher Brad's on that.
Editing that out.
Ooh. and edit it again.
One of the joys I do get is, if you guys are aware, I do the editing of this episode, where I get to take 10 minutes of Brad's speech and just go, nah, and just remove it. Sometimes out of just joy and spite.
Like, he was making a good point here. I'm just going to go ahead.
I'm going to remove that. It because it's just funny. So from them, we'll move on to Death Guard. So Death Guard are actually probably still very much so singular in purpose.
They are also Death Guard. Mortarion made real mistakes. Typhus is a huge dick at this point in time. Typhus fully embraced everything about the plague and became the arguably, you know, I'm saying it out there. He is definitely the favorite son of Nurgle.
Typhus is way more interesting than Nurgle. Mortarion's angry. Typhus just loves being Nurgle.
Yes. Yeah. Mortarion is literally going, I made some bad deals. And Typhus is like, you made some great deals. And I made more of them while you weren't looking.
Well, and I think this is kind of interesting thing, that, like, Mortarion's a weird character because, again, like we've discussed before, he doesn't fall to chaos because he wants to be part of chaos. He actually has hated the Emperor for a long time.
Oh, since the beginning.
But Mortarion's also kind of adult in the sense that, like, he comes over. Yeah. Well, all right.
Sorry, Death Guard guys. Mortarion's an idiot.
Yeah. Well, that's true. He's very good at killing, and that's the extent.
He is the toughest dude in the universe.
Yeah.
And a box of rocks. I'm sorry, but man.
So he has this interesting epiphany because he tries to convince Jagadai Khan, I think at least once, if not twice, to come over. No, basically, he has this moment where, like, no one's with him except for the guys who were all psychopaths. So then he finally comes to this realization that maybe I should understand what chaos is. And all right, let's go to Tirathillion. God, I hate these names. To Raphillion, to go and figure out, like, hey, what is chaos? What is this thing that I'm kind of moving towards? At this point, he hasn't been corrupted yet. He's on the side of chaos, but Nurgle hasn't infused him yet. He goes to this world called Tirathillion. And Tirathillion is a library world. So it's, you know, hey, if you want to look up answers, go to the library. Well, for those of you under the age of 30, libraries are these things that people like Brad and I have to go to look through a card system to find a book to then read the book. The internet's way better. That's all I'm saying.
The internet is on a planet.
Yeah.
Also, the library is the planet. It is. Yeah. That is the sole reason that this planet exists, is to catalog knowledge.
So he gets there and just decides, for whatever reason, I don't feel like checking out a book at the library. I'm just going to conquer the
idiot.
Library. Yeah, I'm just going to kill everyone here because that's the thing I'm best at. Eventually,
he goes for knowledge and murders the people that have the knowledge. That's why I'm saying he's adult. I know this. Unfortunately, everyone, I've read this story. And when I actually read this the first time, I actually got mad about it. Because a guy goes on a quest to find knowledge. You know what? As a D&D guy, this is like me running a campaign and my players killing every NPC they meet as they try to give them information. This is what Typhus.
Before they give the information, he kills them all. So eventually, Mortarion finds the one woman who's actually come to be a demon and brings her back to to his ship.
The woman standing on the X with an anvil, literally Looney Tunes trap. Yeah. And he goes, "This is not a trap. It says trap. There's an X on it.
I'm refusing to accept it's a trap."
Takes her to his flagship. Doesn't interrogate her at the library.
Just brings her right back to his house.
Why not?
That's where you would do it.
He actually interrogates her in his room.
Yeah, exactly. And she informs him that he has been claimed by Nurgle. Which, and again, for Mortarion, this is really bad news. Because Mortarion, let's jump back a little bit. So the Primarchs are all, as babies in incubators, are sent all over the galaxy. So Mortarion awakens on a poison world. So this is who he thinks he is.
With literally tyrants that live where you're not allowed to go because you'll die.
And that's where he grows up. So he thinks he's one of them. Then after the Emperor arrives, the Emperor tells him, no, you're actually part of me. And now he's being told, no, actually, he's part of Nurgle. So,
but also,
Tyrion's whole history.
Everybody that's interacted with him also gives him no choice because the Emperor goes, oh, you remember the guys that you defeated? I don't care. And he leaves and just goes, it'll probably not go back to the exact same way that it was before you left. It 100% went back to the same way.
And so the thing about Mor Tarion is that as you read stories about Mor Tarion, you realize the one thing Mor Tarion really hates is a lack of choice. He likes to feel, he wants to feel like he's in control of his destiny. This is actually a theme amongst other Primarchs as well. Obviously, Conrad Cruz is a big part of this. You know, I think even Sanguinius, a bunch of these guys do have these elements where they want to feel like they have
free will.
Yeah, free will. And Mor Tarion discovers he doesn't. And an interesting thing happens. Mor Tarion, another little side note of him, is he's not a huge fan of psykers. But what is Mor Tarion, Brad?
Super powerful psyker.
Yeah, like not quite Magnus, but not too far off.
Hates himself pretty bad.
Yeah. And then uses said psychic powers to kill the demon
woman. He explodes the demon woman. He doesn't kill her. She blows up.
She blows up. And now, time for Mor Tarion, I don't know what you want to call it, Mark IV, where he realizes that, hey, this warp thing.
He just doubles down out of nowhere.
Yeah,
for no reason. This is actually weird in the lore because he goes from, I hate all psychers, to, I'm totally envying the psyker. And you're like, what?
What happened? You killed all the psychers before. Yeah, that was Magnus 2.0. I'm Magnus
3.0. That was, dude, why are you going to bring up?
That was Mor Tarion 2.0. Yeah. I'm Mor Tarion 3.0.
Why are you bringing up old shit? That was yesterday, man. He's like, exactly. Why are you bringing up old shit?
So we were discussing earlier Typhus. I think now is a good time to kind of dive into Typhus.
The entire time all of this is going on, Typhus has been working backroom deals with Nurgle or heralds of Nurgle. We don't know if he's talking directly to Nurgle. Yeah. He's talking to avatars, whatever. Typhus has literally went, I'm all in immediately. Yeah. Give me power. I will worship you. I will be the herald. And the whole time he's all in on screwing over Mor Tarion, by the way.
Oh, there's no, like, we talk a lot about how these guys have a love for their Primarch. There are a few guys here and there, though, who do not.
At all.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's Typhus, Erebus, Ahriman, probably later in his career.
Ahriman later just doesn't care.
It's these guys end up working almost against their
progeny. Typhus is all in immediately on. And the thing is he's trying to be the prophet, the icon, the avatar. He doesn't care. Like, hey, man, and he says multiple times, effectively, and this isn't all canon. This is a lot of short stories.
Right.
But, like, effectively, if you give me enough power, I'll stab Mor Tarion right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Give me the power. He doesn't want to be your herald, your avatar. I will be.
And let me be it. So, eventually, Typhus sees his moment. And his moment is Mor Tarion turns the fleet towards Earth. And finally, because as you realize in these stories, everyone is told pretty early on, hey, get to Earth, get to Solion.
Mor Tarion was told to get to Earth immediately.
Yeah. And
literally don't do anything else. And he goes, when you said don't do anything else, I'm going to do everything.
But I have stuff to do.
Like a laundry list of shit.
And I will defend Mor Tarion here. Jagatai Khan did the exact same thing. So did, like there's quite a few of the
Primarchs. Oh, you mean all of my least favorite Primarchs?
Yeah. Every Primarch went like, yeah.
These are all the mid-tier guys that went,
my way.
Yeah, I should do this, but maybe I should drive aimlessly around the galaxy. Yeah,
what if I just want to run a bunch of errands on the way? Like, it just seems fun. So, but as they're about to enter the warp, Typhus decides this is his opportunity. So his plan, and I should be honest, it's a pretty good one, is he tells everyone that the navigators that they're using it towards Earth are actually all secretly in contact with Malkador. And the only solution here is to kill them all. So without anyone asking a second question, they kill all of their navigators. So, I don't know, Brad, walk me through navigating the warp towards Earth without a navigator.
Blind? Seems legit.
Yeah, I mean, literally. I mean,
sometimes you have a 0 in 1 billion. You have a better chance of winning the lotto twice and getting struck by lightning in your basement while holding the tickets than getting through the warp with no navigators.
No navigators at all. And so now they're just in the warp. And we've discussed before, time the warp is a little bit weird. It can be
forever.
Yeah, it can be forever. It can be a quarter second. It can be whatever. This is the chance. This is what Nurgle does. So while they're just kind of left floating aimlessly in the warp, Nurgle goes, cool, no barriers here. Guess I'm going to go ahead and take all of you.
Well, he infects everyone with the worst plague of all time.
Yeah.
And as he's infecting everyone, I don't know, maybe someone makes another. Remember when we said, get Johnny Cochran, get a goddamn lawyer.
Yeah.
When you say, if you can make me this stop, I will follow you. You shouldn't sign on the dotted line when the answer was, you won't die.
Look for more details.
Yeah.
So this is where Mortarion finally gives in. This plague is eating his legion. But
it's eating him and his legion.
It's eating his legion alive, but it's horrid because it won't kill you. You just have suffering. And we've discussed before, they're in the warp not that long, but it feels like centuries.
Yeah.
They're just slowly being eaten. And Nurgle is constantly coming to Mortarion because just like with Magnus, it does still run Primarch down. While some soldiers can get themselves over to Nurgle, that's not what Nurgle wants. Nurgle wants the whole Legion. So Mortarion is just being berated by Nurgle, like, just come to me, join me, and I will make this stop. I'll make this stop. So finally, Mortarion does this, and he pledges his Legion.
Nurgle said that Mortarion, you and your Legion will not die
if you give yourselves to me.
And Nurgle was true to his word. Grandfather Nurgle doesn't lie to you.
Not a liar.
Did not give away the plague. Kept them with the plague. They are eternally suffering, but they can now.
But they won't function. Die from it.
Yeah.
And Mortarion at this point turns into a demon prince. So that's, and we'll cover more in this later, but just so for the record, we now have three demon princes on Chaos' side. We're about to talk about another one, Fulgrim. So, and this one's...
best model that's not in 40K yet.
Yep. Now, I will say this story is a little bit loopy, so I apologize if it feels a little disjointed, but it just is what it is.
This is like... but it's also like 100 years of stuff wrapped into.
Yeah. So we'll do the quick hits initially. So to remind everyone, Fulgrim is kind of possessed, kind of imprisoned. He was fighting Ferris Manus, holding a demon sword, cut Ferris's head off with the demon sword, or the demon sword cut Ferris's head off, whichever way you want to look at it. And instantly when it happened, Fulgrim is trapped inside his own body.
To which he says he's not.
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah. Later on.
Sort of.
So, I mean, no, he totally was possessed.
He was possessed. I mean, this is where some of these stories get a little bit funny, because Fulgrim was possessed, this is post-Istvan V, comes wandering into Horus's ship and is just kind of being weird.
Well, and Horus is immediately,
Horus knows what's up.
That's what I'm saying. He sees his warp presence.
Yeah, but who does see what's up and gets super upset is Lorgar.
Yeah, he was.
Lorgar was super upset about the possession, which I'm assuming is jealousy. That's just my opinion. But anyway, Lorgar freaks out. And this is kind of where we get our first glimpse into Horus, the level of Horus's corruption. Because as Brad was saying, Horus knew instantly that Fulgrim was possessed.
Horus is wildly powerful, but Horus isn't just wildly powerful with, you know, strength and dexterity and constitution. Horus is infused with understanding.
Yeah.
The one of the biggest draws for Horus to be into chaos is they keep giving him knowledge, understanding, wisdom. You are the wisest. This is why you are better than your father. You understand what's happening in the galaxy. Your plan is the best plan because you're so smart, so wise. You can see the truth about people. He has the actual ability to see into the warp. He's wildly intelligent. He already was, but he's literally infused everywhere.
More powerful now. Yeah. And so Horus sees this. And what's interesting about this story, and it's a little kind of a quick hit on this, but Lorgar notices that something's wrong with Fulgrim. And Lorgar attacks Fulgrim and starts actually beating up Fulgrim. And for any of you who know any of the lore, Lorgar was the shittiest fighter of all of the Primarchs. Well,
because of the fact that Fulgrim is currently at odds with himself.
Well, and the thing is, but also he's not the Primarch. He's a demon prince. And Lorgar,
that's what I'm saying. He's puppeting along.
My point is, Lorgar the Primarch is more powerful than a random demon.
Demon, yes.
So he's able to beat the crap out of him, and everyone kind of sees, this is Fulgrim. Fulgrim would have whooped Fulgrim.
Ruined him.
Ass. And he's winning. So Horus has to get involved and actually separates them. And this is just an interesting moment where it's the, you know, rather than let Lorgar beat up the demon who has possessed and taken control of his brother, Horus goes, no, this is cool. Don't worry about it. Like, we're good.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
It's time to accept it. The holidays are upon us, and finding gifts for people is never easy or really fun. Luckily, we at the 40K Lorecast have a new sponsor, which will help you make your holiday shopping fast and easy. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Add some personalization to your holiday shopping with Uncommon Goods. Did I go there and buy the game Fart Bingo? Yeah, I did. Is it for my child to play with his friends? We'll go with, yeah. At the same time, I was able to get a cocktail smoker. So yeah, those are probably all for me. Anyway, that's what's great about Uncommon Goods. They have uncommon, get it, collection of items you can choose from, allowing you to pick up a fun variety of items this holiday season. You'll find thousands of gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. So, shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/40klore, 40klore. That's uncommongoods.com/40klore for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers. But that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
From there, we're going to jump into kind of removing the possession, not moving the possession.
Well, it becomes really weird because Lucius the Eternal, who the unbeatable swordsman that got beat like 6 times in the books, but whatever, we won't talk about
that. I'm not going to discuss that.
But he effectively knows that his Primarch is less than he used to be. And because, again, chaos, Lucius doesn't give a shit about the possession. He gives a shit about the fact that his Primarch isn't as strong, isn't as perfect, isn't the pinnacle of what he was before. And because of that is like, well, it'd be fine if you were possessed and you were better, but right. You're not.
But you're worse. Not. So that's like, well, so now I have to go deal with this possession.
Correct.
And so when you're in the Emperor's Children, you go and you find your great buddy, Fabius Bile.
This is such a great story because you just go, Fabius Bile. And you're like, ooh, that guy's weird, man. Like, Dark Eldar think that Fabius Bile
Dark Eldar, Dark Eldar meet Fabius Bile and go, whoa.
Like, whoa. Pull it back a little bit, yeah, man. Like,
man, there's limits and you are well beyond that.
And this is how you know that Fulgrim is not Fulgrim, because literally a trio of red shirts plus... It is.
Yeah.
It's literally nobody.
Random dudes just grab Fulgrim.
And just jack him up. And You're like, yeah, man, this would never happen.
You would all be insta-dead.
Yeah. I would have accidentally killed you. I wouldn't even mean to. I just would have killed you. And you're wearing a red shirt. So you just die.
And so they take him to Fabius Bile, whose great plan is, I know how to get a demon possession out.
I'm going to torture it.
I'm just going to torture it until the demon leaves. And everyone goes, yeah, that makes sense. And this is where this story just gets a little bit weird.
This is such trash, by the way. I'm sorry.
Brad, I'm letting you do this one because
I just refuse to believe any of this.
Yeah.
So Fulgrim just pops out, okay? I'm not making this up.
Yeah.
Fulgrim pops out and just says, bros, I was in charge all the time. I was just trying to figure out the ways of chaos and how things happen. And I was getting information. You're like, so you weren't totally possessed and imprisoned inside the sword? He's like, nah.
No, not at all. But weren't you like losing sword fights to like Eric?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was a ruse. Everything was, it was this really colossal ruse. So, yeah.
So they do this thing where they basically did a Constantine where they jam the demon into, I'm going to look at your ratings, a painting. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a mirror now because that's what happened to Constantine, but whatever.
You got to think, you mix it. You're thinking of Constantine, not Ghostbusters 2. It's important to understand the difference. This is Ghostbusters 2.
My bad. So, like, he just pretends that he was fine the whole time. Guys, I would have been good. You're like, it feels like you were totally possessed and not in control. And then he's just like, no, that was never the case. In the stories, they just kind of roll with that.
Yeah.
And I claim BS on this.
Yeah, I've tried. I'm with Brad. There's no way this is accurate. And I pulled the books. I pulled the codexes. Yeah, apparently it's a story. So, but this is where the story gets to be kind of funny. So Fulgrim has now was possessed, was not possessed, is possessed. Who cares? They've saved him from his possession. And Fulgrim has now decided that the best solution for Fulgrim is to go be the greatest version of himself that ever could be by infusing himself with the most amount of chaos he possibly could.
Out of nowhere.
So again, this might seem like a weird story, but we have to tell you this story because there's some linearness to this. And it gets us into the next story here, which is the Iron Warriors. And so quick recap on Iron Warriors. Brad, why are the Iron Warriors on the side of the traitors?
Because they want to punch Rogel Dorn right in his throat. They do not care. They actually don't have any. Perturabo literally denies all of the Chaos Powers multiple times and just goes, I don't care. I just want to be on the other side of Rogel Dorn.
Perturabo is almost tragic that he is the only non-kind of possessed guy surrounded by possessed people. Because he just really wanted to punch Rogel Dorn. So Fulgrim out of nowhere appears to Perturabo and says, hey, I've got a great way to make the Iron Warriors more perfect. And if anyone says I got a way to make you perfect, it is Fulgrim's the guy you want to listen to. Because he's obsessed with perfection. As much as we can shit talk him, his legion really was amazing because they strived for perfection. And Perturabo has kind of a history of failing. So if you go to him and say, hey, I can
true make story
it. You'll never lose. You'll never fail. So you can actually be number one. Because as much as Perturabo wanted to hit Rogel Dorn, he also was afraid of Rogel Dorn.
Well, you also have to go back. This is also 500 years into, you're almost as good as 6 to 8 of your brothers.
Yeah.
And you're just like, what? You go, yeah, if you were cool as those guys, they're like one brother? No, like most of your brothers.
Like all the cool ones. But you're right below that tier. Yeah. He was like,
you're at the top of the trash tier for sure.
Yeah, screw you. I'm going to be that tier. So he goes and says, hey, I got this plan. All you have to do is come with me into the Eye of Terror, and we're going to capture a special weapon. It's called the Angel Exterminatus. Again, I'm going to keep in these footnotes. GW names things the way a 6-year-old names a lightsaber.
Either that or they completely jack up another culture and name everything after.
There's also that one. Their interpretation of Latin annoys me a lot.
Don't worry about it. Just move on.
I'm old enough to have learned Latin.
Sorry.
I am goddamn ancient. Anyway, so they decided to go to this world, which...
It's an Elder Crone world, though.
So they're going to an Elder Crone world within the system. Meanwhile, there's a ship called the Sisyphium. This is made up of space marines who survived Istvan V, Brad. And what is their viewpoint on the traitors?
I will punch you right in the throat. Yeah.
And I don't care. You just stabbed me while I
it didn't. Yeah. They everybody on the ship is already, they're in their mind, they're already dead.
Yeah.
They just want to take their pound of flesh. They want to get revenge. Every one of these people, it's true.
Yeah.
But they all think that their Primarchs are dead.
And killed by these people that they're pursuing to go harm. And this is going to come up in a second, but when to kind of set the stage, there is a group of space marines who are pursuing Fulgrim and Petarabo into the Eye of Terror to go
on
to this
suicide mission.
Yeah, this planet called Idris. No, one of those.
Idris Elba, he's there.
Idris. So they reach a crone. So Fulgrim and Petarabo land on this Eldar world, which is, and I put in quotations, vacant. There's nothing there, but there's a bunch of structures.
Right now in the notes, I need to tell everybody that every episode, John, we go through an outline, okay? And every single episode, there's at least once, usually more, that John puts in something that's only there to piss me off.
Yeah.
And
we're about to get to that. We're about to get here. So they land on the planet, and Petarabo is trying to be the siege master that he is, and he starts, you know, he starts fortifying his position on this vacant world, but he doesn't fortify all of it, just partially. So what's my note, Brad?
Sadness. Rogel Dorn would have done it better. And the problem is in this point, you're not wrong.
Yeah,
Rogel Dorn. The siege master is not the fortification master.
No. So he does a mediocre job of fortification, and that's going to come back to burn him in a second. So as they move towards this inner sanctum of this world, the Eldar that are left there,
who are super not okay with Slaanesh,
yeah, notice that, hey, this guy, Fulgrim, and his legion, who are pretty heavily tied into the god we created and ended our civilization,
who's also actively pursuing our immortal souls,
just showed up and decide, and I'm gonna let Brad explain to everyone what Wraith Constructs are, but they wake up.
Yeah. So Wraith Constructs are the fighting machines, the dreadnoughts, but way goddamn better.
And how good are Wraith Constructs at fighting?
Well, they're pretty goddamn resilient. let's talk about their weapon.
Yeah.
Most of the Wraith Constructs are architected with weapons called D-weapons, which open up portals into not here.
Yeah, and blast you with them.
Well, also they put part of you in there. So basically they go, hey, a 2-foot by 2-foot circle of your body just went to the warp. You're still here.
Yeah.
But, you know, that circle.
That circle that you kind of probably cared about quite a bit.
Yeah, you're like, hey, man, remember the time when the middle of my body didn't exist in this realm? It's not great.
So Fulgrim and Petarabo are under attack. Now, again, Petarabo could have built better defenses for this.
Which, by the way, this is something that they've never encountered.
Yeah, and they've never seen this. The Wraith Constructs are new, so they are just getting blasted. Fun story, though, is that this Fulgrim, you know, Petarabo and the Iron Warriors begin fighting the Wraith Constructs. Some of the Emperor's children do, but Fulgrim couldn't care less about this because Fulgrim had a side plan here.
Well, he also has a side plan that works because of this.
Yep.
Weirdly, his plan would not have worked if things would have went well.
Yeah, because Fulgrim would have been prepared. So before they came down there, Fulgrim gives Petarabo a gift. And again, who takes a gift from a dude as weird as Fulgrim? Like, it's like, or at least more importantly, don't put it on. So he gives him a cloak with a little stone
in it. He's so creepy by now, by the way.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's just a guy like, hey, you know, like, no. This stone, though, that he gives to Petarabo actually wasn't a, like, decorative stone, because why would it be? Instead, it's sapping the life energy out of Petarabo.
It's literally draining his soul.
Yeah, it's pulling his soul into it.
By the way, worst gift ever.
Yeah, has no idea, other than that Fulgrim kind of looks weird to him, the whole thing. But out of nowhere, they're standing there, they're getting attacked by these Wraith Constructs. Everyone's screaming, trying to get control. And what's Fulgrim do? He attacks Petarabo.
Because why not?
Because he needs to kill him. And Petarabo, rather surprisingly, can't fight.
Super not cool with it, but also didn't notice for some unknown reason. By the way, I'd be way cooler with Iron Warriors if this didn't happen.
I know, it's like,
this is one of my first stories that I read about the Iron Warriors, and I was like, I really like you guys because you tool up my least favorite legion of the Imperial Fist. I mean, they do.
Do that.
Later on, they do.
We're getting into this.
But we will do an episode on this.
Yeah.
But the fact is, this is one of the first stories I read, and for some unknown reason, the guy that's supposed to see next level, next step, because he's the siege guy, he plans so far ahead, literally didn't notice that him and everyone around him was being soul sucked.
Yeah.
By the guy literally next to you.
And all of his energy is gone. So at this point, Fulgrim, though, does do the bad guy monologue and explains that, yeah, I'm sucking your energy out into this stone, and then I'm going to combine your energy with my energy, and I'm going to become the most powerful being in the whole world. And he's doing all this stuff, and Petarabo goes, no, and decides just to kind of throw the stone that was taking his energy away from him, like that would do anything. But as we said, the Wraith construct attack helped Fulgrim. Now,
the loyalist attack.
The Sisyphus attack helps Petarabo.
Well, I mean, it doesn't help him. It literally makes it so he doesn't get forever destroyed.
Yeah.
No, it's a big thing on this because Fulgrim's plan wasn't, I am going to defeat Petarabo.
Yeah.
Fulgrim's plan was, I'm going to make you not exist in time or space. He was going to take his warp essence, basically his eternal soul.
Oh, yeah. And he was going to. Fulgrim had no ill will towards Petarabo. It was just Petarabo was a means to Fulgrim becoming the most powerful weapon
in the galaxy. But it wasn't a kill. You can come back from a kill. You can't come back from, I'm going to absorb the literal essence of your being into myself.
Yeah.
That's why he wanted to become powerful with that. And that's a big thing in the story. That's a difference. It's so much more severe than I'm going to kill you.
Yeah.
You can come back from a kill in 40K, kind of.
Yeah.
Depending.
It depends who you are.
It depends on how thick your plot armor is.
Yes.
But you can't come back from, hey, man, I devoured the essence of your being, your warp essence, your soul, whatever you want to call it. That is what he was looking for. That's how he was looking to power up. He wasn't looking to, I want to defeat you. He was looking to be. Yeah. I want to consume your essence.
My theory when I read this was that Petarabo was just someone Fulgrim realized he could manipulate, so he did. And Fulgrim manipulated him so that, because he just needed a Primarch. He didn't have to be Petarabo. He needed a Primarch. And Mortarion wasn't going to happen. Magnus wasn't going to happen. Definitely not Lorgar. Horus, right out. I mean, so he kind of was like, hey, who would follow me into the Eye of Terror for apparently no reason? Petarabo's kind of an idiot. All right, let's grab him.
He literally gave him a piece of candy.
Piece of candy. But what happens is during this fight, Petarabo throws the stone and it's just sitting there, and the loyalists attack. And a random loyalist.
This is trash.
Yeah, but it's just one of these fun
stories. I'm sorry, but it is.
A loyalist sees the stone and shoots the stone, which blows up the stone.
Which is, by the way, the stone's apparently made of cheap glass.
It could absorb all the power of a Primarch, but if you shoot it with a bolter, it explodes.
A bolter. Yeah. Literally a bolter around blows it up.
So
hold on. Boo. Boo. Boo on you, sir.
The stone explodes, and all of the energies that it absorbed goes back to where it came from. Because, again, that's how that would work. And Petarabo just kind of, resurrects off the floor and begins to piss out of Fulgrim.
Fulgrim literally Obi-Wans him.
Yeah.
Like 1000% Obi-Wans him, just hands down. Yeah. Oh no, you've won. Yeah. Like huge air quotes, by the way.
Yeah. And Fulgrim is killed by Petarabo.
Yeah, killed.
Sort of.
Sorry. Like I cannot put enough quotations around kill. When you lean into the blow and instantly get reborn as the coolest model in 40K, which is a forearm snake with wings.
Let's go with this. Yeah, so he splits in half. This is actually a cool thing. This is the one part. This story is kind of dumb, except for this bit here, where he splits in half.
The story is super dumb, except for this
bit. Yeah, he splits in half and then reforms as a giant purple forearm snake with Scandinavian hair metal.
Death metal. Oh, yeah, you gotta forget that Fulgrim's like literally the prettiest person you've ever seen.
Beautiful. I mean, it is. And so, those of you who haven't looked, just Google Fulgrim model and you'll see it. They've made one now. We have one just not for 40K, it's for 30K.
You shut your face. I'm
just saying.
Because in the reveal, they did not say it was for 30K. They just put the model out. Screw you, GW.
Yeah.
But also,
it would have been awesome. So Fulgrim. But then at the same time, because Fulgrim really is just kind of an ass here, as soon as he achieves this ascension he's been looking for, he teleports.
Deuces out. In the middle of a fight.
So now you've got Iron Warriors, Wraith Constructs.
No, not just Wraith Constructs, a lot.
Yeah, all of the Wraith Constructs.
Yeah, it is a lot of Wraith Constructs.
And random Astartes all just kind of shooting at each other. And Petarabo's there like, oh, and then the planet turns into a black
hole. I forgot this. Yeah. It's funny because I surprise myself because I look at the notes later a lot of times, but I forgot about this because you're like, hey, he basically did the whole, well, shit can't get any worse than this. Yeah. And you're like, whoa, shouldn't jinx yourself.
What if everyone's fighting you and the place they're fighting you on is imploding into a black hole?
You're like, for why? Reasons.
For reasons. So Petarabo jumps back to his ship and they try to leave orbit, but now there's a black hole behind them. And I have to give Petarabo credit.
This is a ballsy move. Something
kind of cool where he just says, my legion always moves forward, never back. And he turns his ships around and launches himself into the black hole. So just for recap.
Q's Disney movie.
Yeah. Fulgrim is now a demon prince. Petarabo has now disappeared into a black hole.
By the way, this is not what Horus told people to
do. Horus, by the way, told both these guys to go to meet up on Mars, which we'll get to in a minute.
Hey guys, I'm just recapping the plan.
Yeah.
You did steps A through Z, and none of those were what I said to do.
He's in the wrong alphabet. No. These guys, you're the A through Z. That's a lot of credit. These guys jumped to a Cyrillic alphabet at this stage here.
Like, is that a backwards E?
Yeah. From there, we'll jump over to one of the last of the falls, which is the World Eaters. So
Angron has no big plans. Angron just gets distracted by Shiny. Let's be honest with you.
So Angron is with Lorgar and they're fighting the Ultramarines, as we covered in the last episode, But during this campaign, Lorgar realizes something's off with Angron, more than just off. Like, Angron's nuts, but he realizes Angron is actually dying. These butcher's nails in his skull are...
To back up, though, Angron is not a demon prince right now.
No, yeah, Angron is just a Primarch, and he is dying. And the issue, so Lorgar decides that they need to pull... Because Lorgar is a weird character, where like it seems like some of the other Primarchs he liked a lot, and others... He did not, but he liked Angron for whatever
reason. He is a weird kid, by the way.
Oh, Lorgar, he's just a weird...
Like, most likely to do bad things randomly.
Lorgar decides the best thing to do for Angron is take him back to his home world, in quotes, of Nusaria. And that's where they put the butcher's nails in his head. They'll go there, and they're going to make the people take the butcher's nails out of his head, or at least fix it.
And they have no ability, nor desire to fix this.
And to make things worse...
Also, they talk mad shit when they come down.
One little piece about this is that Angron, when the Emperor took him from Nusaria...
Left him hanging like nobody's business.
He basically told him, don't worry about it. All your friends there will be fine.
No, he literally left him, hey, you're in the middle of a Spartacus rebellion. Yeah. I may or may not be doing my last stand. And the Emperor went, this looks stupid. And grabbed Angron and just deuced out. And just went... Yeah, your friends probably, maybe they survived. Who cares? I don't really give a shit.
They're probably fine. Turns out when Angron gets back to Nusaria, how did his friends do, Brad?
Yeah, they all died. Yeah. Like, wait a second. Carry the one. Absolutely zero people survived that he knew. Every single person that he was friends with not only got killed, got mercilessly tortured and killed and put as an example, by the way, for the rest of the populace. So not your friends didn't just die. Your friends got tortured, killed. Oh, yeah. They literally put them up on posts to go, don't do this shit anymore. And this is everyone you've ever known.
Or cared about. These are the only friends, only true friends that you've ever had. And they're all dead.
Like, not just dead. Like, displayed. Like, you are now on my kitchen table.
Yeah. Like you're my trophy of how dead you are.
Right.
So Angron just loses his mind.
He's not super happy about it.
But to make things more fun, as we discussed in prior episodes, Lorgar and his buddies decided to surprise Gilliman with a surprise attack. And Gilliman decides that wasn't cool and has been following them the whole time. So while Angron kind of wanders off on his anger party.
Do you ever think that Bobby G is like, he's probably got a bad back from the weight of all the plot armor that's on him? I'm just saying, like, it's got to be heavy to carry.
Yeah. So Ultramarines decide to attack the Word Bearers.
I'm sorry, but he just survives in a moment. Go ahead. Oh, no, he does.
Gilliman's master thing is, what's the latest moment I can arrive and still be on time? Cool.
But also, he literally is in a fight with double Primarchs. I'm skipping ahead a little bit.
Yeah.
They're literally on a mountain in a summoning circle because Lorgar, for whatever reason, because sometimes he does semi-cool shit, figures out that Angron's just going to die. Oh, wait, I forgot to mention that Angron decides that this entire planet has to die.
Yeah.
We should actually 1%.
Jump there. So Angron has discovered all his friends are dead. And what's his response to this, Brad? Kill the entire planet.
That's what I'm saying. I think what I said was way more accurate.
Everyone on this planet is responsible for the death of all my friends. I am going to literally remove every person from this planet.
His whole plan is to genocide the planet. Just like, hey, man, I'm killing the squirrels. I'm killing the people.
Nothing.
Everybody's got to die. And the thing is that he goes, what, are you going to virus bomb the planet? No, I'm going to punch to death. Everyone.
Yeah. I'm going to pick, and they're all gone.
Yeah, everyone has to die.
At this stage, the Ultramarines show up because Gilliman's been following them the entire time and has decided that Lorgar needs to die for what he did to me back on
Gilliman. He's not wrong.
Yeah, he's not wrong at all. And they just begin beating the ever-living crap out of the Word
Bearers. Have the Word Bearers ever won a fight?
Who knows? Who cares? They're lame. But so Gilliman is just beating the hell out of Lorgar. But Angron, I guess, is bored.
By the way, we gotta pause this. I need to break this up. Because Lorgar may or may not have been an epic supervillain in this fight.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
Because Lorgar already has a summoning circle set up.
Yep.
And this has already happened. Bobby G and Lorgar start fighting. Lorgar is literally a 3-foot-tall guy with a limp and for a Primarch, and he's getting his ass kicked because that's what Lorgar does, but he's already set the space. By the way, also, randomly, they're fighting on a mountainside. There's no reason to throw out. There's no fights happening on the mountainside.
Yeah,
they just go to the mountainside.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, hey, man, you want to fight? Yeah. Can we do it on a mountain? You're like, but there's no fighting going on. Like, we would have to, like, take some serious time to get there. Like,
I'll get my backpack. I got to hike up the mountain. Yeah. There's a whole process.
Like, I'll meet you, like I don't know, like in 6 hours? In
6 hours, I'll see you there. All right.
All right, cool.
Yeah, drop a pin.
We can fight right here.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's really what, there's no fighting going on this mountain. It's just Lorgar and Bobby G and the summoning circle. He's like, again, this is why Bobby G is the best and the worst with the plot armor, because Bobby G goes to a wildly, this is a trap.
Yeah.
Don't go here. And he goes, I'm going to go there by myself.
Yeah. We all have our favorites. And I actually like Gilliman a lot. I think Gilliman did it as a screw you and your trap. I still think I can beat the crap out of you.
I mean, it's wildly a trap.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know it's a trap, but
I'm
going to go to your trap and beat the crap out of you in your trap.
I mean, he does pummel him, like laughably pummel him. And this is, again, Bobby G. The problem is Bobby G has the bad guy thing.
Yeah.
Because Bobby G has to give Lorgar a lecture.
Well, it's not the bad guy thing. Bobby G, what is his superpower?
He's the ultimate bureaucracy. Yeah.
So you know what? I'm explaining to you, this is why I'm beating you with my right hand. This is why I'm beating you with my left hand.
So
he gives him
literally a lecture of, this is why I beat the shit out of you, which he does, by the way. Like, it's laughable. Yeah. And then Angron shows up out of nowhere.
Leaps up out of nowhere, more accurately.
Kind of, really. It just goes, nah.
And attacks Gilliman, who Gilliman, to be fair, actually beats back pretty well.
Angron
pretty badly.
Well, Angron at this point in time is also literally losing his mind.
And he's just killed 3 million people. His arm's a little bit tired.
Well, it's not even just that. He also doesn't know where the hell he is.
Yeah.
I mean, legitimately, he's in if you read it, he literally starts like thinking he's in the past, he's in the present, he's in the future. He doesn't know what's going on because, again, the nails are killing him. But also, oh, I don't know, Larga may or may not have had a ritual circle right over to the side and is literally drawing him into it because
Lorgar has a plan.
Lorgar has a plan. And Angron is effectively standing in, I'm going to become a demon prince. I don't want to, but I'm about to. Yeah.
And so the thing that before Angron went on his little crusade of kill everybody, he went to all the graves of all of his friends and actually collect them and made, like, we think about like someone having like a bunch of skulls attached to their body. Yes. It should be your enemies. But in Angron's case, these are actually his
best friends.
Yeah. So for this is, again, I'm going to keep calling GW out when they do this. This is a Hamlet reference. For those of you who are not aware of it, this is 100% a Hamlet reference. And I support it because I actually like Shakespeare. But this is a Hamlet reference. As Gilliman and Angron are fighting, Gilliman hits him with his sword and his belt of skulls of his buddies fall off of him.
Oh, God. Then Bobby G, I forgot about this part. Bobby G accidentally steps on it.
On his friend, Sean.
And Angron loses his shit.
Yeah. Right as Lorgar chants the last bits of his ritual. At which point, Angron goes from Angron, the world's angriest Primarch,
who's also about to die and doesn't know where he is,
to Angron,
the demon prince
model in 40K, demon prince.
Probably, yes.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is just...
He is juiced up like nobody's business.
Wings pop out of his back. He, like, doubles in size, turns bright red. Angron is insane. And Gilliman is standing in front of this monstrosity of power.
To give G-Man credit, as usual, he doesn't run away or anything.
He just stands there. But luckily, at this moment, side note, as Lorgar is converting Angron to a demon prince, Angron's legion has psychers in it.
Oh, shit, I forgot about this.
Yeah, I just as I'm looking at that, remember this. So, guys, for a little left turn, these psychers, because they are, again, Angron's offspring, effectively sense something going on the problem and try to stop Lorgar's ritual, which the demon prince that ends up possessing Angron doesn't take kindly to.
No, he obliterates everyone, and Bobby G gets to run away, not just because plot armor, because Angron's too busy killing the shit out of those psychers.
Yeah, and this is where Gilliman escapes with, leaving behind Lorgar and Angron.
Also, how does Lorgar keep getting away?
Well, don't worry. We're about to get into Lorgar deciding this. So here we are. Lorgar has just made his, third demon. I mean, he's all over.
I have to give him credit for it. He is manipulating shit.
Oh, he's incredible.
For the biggest, he's the weakest of the Primarchs, is he not?
By far.
Yeah, I felt like I was making that up at first.
Conrad Cruz.
Yeah, but he's like spikes. It depends on what book. Yeah,
it depends what you know. But Lorgar is
Conrad's either like amazingly powerful or terrible. I don't know
of a story where Lorgar wins a fight.
No, he's never won anything. Yeah. So, by the way, this is bonkers town to me. I get it in the story, but Lorgar decides that Horus is weak and not the right fit to lead this insurrection.
Well, it's jealousy. This kind of really brings us to that culmination point of chaos corruption. Lorgar is behind Horus's original corruption.
Oh, it's 1,000%. I mean, Erebus is actually the better part, but
true. But it's Lorgar. I would argue it's Lorgar's.
Lorgar's plan.
And at a certain point, like any good bad guy, Lorgar decides that actually, he's not as loyal to the Chaos Gods as I am. Why should it be Horus?
Which he was not the original, by the way.
He was. And decides that he needs to go do something. So we could dive into a lot of detail about how he tried, all the pieces that he does here. But I'm going to give you guys kind of the shortened version of it so we don't just drone on forever. Lorgar needs to defeat Horus, and he can't defeat Horus himself. So he decides the best way to do it is to possess Fulgrim, who is, of the remaining Primarchs, probably the best fighter.
Yes, 100, like laughably.
Yeah, so the best fighter.
Like if you're talking about being one-on-one fight, not being psychic, not being planet, not being anything, Fulgrim, especially in his new form.
Yep.
And also, To be fair, Lorgar doesn't know the juiced power that Chaos has infused Horus with, because Horus has not ever given himself at this point in time.
Yeah, he wouldn't know how powerful Horus is. Yeah. So
Horus has been infused, but Horus is also semi-keeping himself.
Yeah.
Horus at least thinks that he is making decisions based on
Unless you fight Horus, you don't realize how powerful Horus is.
Right.
And that's the thing. So he goes to Fulgrim and he finds Fulgrim. Fulgrim has, by the way, disappeared ever since screwing over Pederabo. And he finds him where? In a Slaaneshian temple, just having a Slaanesh level party.
He's at a rave.
He's at a blood rave.
It's a Slaanesh rave.
It's a Slaanesh rave.
I just thought that was said without saying it.
She's at a Slaanesh rave. And Lorgar, because he's Lorgar, tricks Fulgrim into actually giving his soul and control over to a dark apostle that he's brought with him.
Oh, he, again, a comical trap.
Yeah, just dumb.
He's in the middle of a crazy bloodthirst rave party, whatever they're doing. It's very odd. It's effectively a lot of ceremonial bloodletting.
Yeah.
And then Fulgrim, actually, I hate the story. As a whim, he's basically sign here.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, man, like, whatever.
His soul over.
I'm busy partying. Yep. I accidentally gave my soul to the guy that was going door to door asking for souls. I mean, that's how bad it is.
It really is. Yeah. It's not even Fulgrim at this point. It's just like, I think the demons, like, we can just possess him because we're bored. And that seems to be
kind of thing. Yeah.
So Lorgar now has a plan. All right, I've got Fulgrim with me. We're going to go to have a chat with Horus. And then while I'm talking to Horus, I'm going to make Fulgrim kill him.
But again, Horus can see warp identities. Horus can actually see your intentions, basically. He can see effectively your soul. He can see what you intend to do to him, which is a big deal. Like, again, the Chaos guys did, most of the Primarchs were infused with, I'm stronger, faster, better.
Yeah.
Horus wasn't just infused with that. Horus was infused with, I'm stronger, faster, better. I'm wiser. I'm more intelligent. Like I was saying before, like, they gave him extra sight, extra wisdom, because that was the draw, because Horus was already super strong, super fast. Yeah. He's like, I'm arguably the best already, guys. This doesn't give me anything. He goes, yeah, but we're going to give you more wisdom. You're already right. We're going to help you be more right.
Horus actually, of course, sees this coming.
And Lorgar, wildly sees it coming.
Yeah, Lorgar springs his trap only to discover that Horus knew about it. The guy
instantly pummels him.
Yeah, Fulgrim had already been released from his imprisonment for the 11th time, if we're keeping track. And Horus just decides, all right, well, you betrayed me, bye, and beats the ever-living crap out of Lorgar.
He legitimately punches him in the face as he comes onto his bridge.
And banishes Lorgar.
We were doing this injustice because he effectively Hulk Loki's him.
Oh, yeah.
Just grabs him and just...
In front of everybody.
Oh, he just thunderdumps him.
Everybody.
Also... talking shit to everybody else in the room. Yeah,
while just beating
Lorgar. He literally thunderdomes Lorgar while basically telling everyone else, look at me, eye contact.
Yeah.
This is what happens when you betray me. Yeah. And that was the biggest thing for Lorgar, is he was disrespecting him so badly at the same time.
But anyway, he doesn't kill Lorgar. He does spare his life and banishes him.
Because of reasons.
Mark. Yeah, the mark. And banishes him to the
world. This never goes bad for it, too.
Yeah. So that's actually going to bring us to the conclusion of our Primarchs and where they are. The one other piece that we need to jump into before we go to the final invasion of Sol
is do it, John.
The Dark Mechanicum.
And there's
so much stuff happening here, and we're going to have to kind of keep this. We are going to do a very deep dive into AdMech in the future, and anytime we do a dive into AdMech, we're going to have to talk about the origins of AdMech and the Dark Mechanicum. But we cannot talk about the invasion of Terra without discussing the Dark Mechanicum. So let's dive into this.
Fine.
Fairly. So if this feels condensed to all of you.
Cough, cough. There's still a Catan there.
Yeah. So the AdMech have always been suspicious of the Emperor. he's been, he Brad just said this really well in a prior episode, that the Emperor always appears in whatever form you want to see him as. So he appears on Mars as the
Messiah.
Messiah. The Omnissiah. That's like the Omnissiah. He appears on Mars as the Omnissiah.
100%.
And Admech go, oh, our God is here. And so they just kind of capitulate to what he says. But as time goes by, they start to have questions like, hey, was that dude the Omnissiah?
Which doesn't help that Cass is around going, no, he wasn't. Who was that? Don't worry about it. He wasn't.
And there's this interesting vault that I don't really want to dive too much into, but it's important. The Emperor, after just like, because he loves to do this stuff, is says, don't do X.
Yeah. Why? Not don't talk about it. Just don't do
so
it.
So there's this mysterious vault on Mars that he bars the Admech from opening. And the Admech have always wanted to open the vault. Anyone who has children understands what I'm doing. So a new time goes by, and just right about the time of the Horus heresy, a new fabricator general comes up named Kelbor Hall.
Who is super not down with the Emperor, yeah, by the way.
Really hates him. Horus knows about this. And Horus also, because he was the war master for the Emperor, knows the truth. What Horus knows is that he knows the Emperor actually is betraying the Admech. He knows that as they were waging their campaigns, they were finding STC drives. They were finding AI.
They have a lot of them, actually.
And destroying it rather than
they had a vault of STCs, mm-hmm. and they destroyed all AI that they encountered. Not only destroyed it, but obliterated it from anyone knowing about it.
The thing is, and I know there are Admech fans out there, but the fact of the matter about Admech is everyone, if you read enough lore in 40K, you realize Admech are right on that edge of launching the entirety of the Imperium back into the Dark Age of Technology. Oh, they would do it in a quarter of a second. So Horus has this problem. He needs the Admech on his side, but if he gives them the AI stuff that they want, it actually will eat the galaxy.
The Iron Men will be instantly back.
Boom, they're all back. So what he does is he kind of teases them. He gives them one STC drive as proof that the Emperor is holding it back from him. And to be fair, that's all that Kelbor needs. Kelbor says, cool. I'm on your team.
He was also the guy looking for a reason.
The problem is that Horus, I don't think at this stage Horus fully understood the power that Chaos had throughout the universe. And so maybe he didn't know about the vault, or he didn't think it was that big of a deal. But Kelbor takes this, creates a revolution on Mars, and opens what's called the Vault of Moravec.
Which is just jam-packed full of not great things.
Chaos robots, effectively.
Well, they've been infected for literally thousands of years. Like, they actually weren't chaos-infused stuff originally.
And now, and so we talk about the Dark Mechanicum. The Dark Mechanicum are a combo of, yes, they are traitors, but they're actually chaos-infused robots, for lack of a better
phrase. They're semi-correct, though, because their machines are better, because this is effectively, to them, new technology.
Well, I mean, and again, this hasn't played it out in the game in every edition, but Chaos should be more powerful than regular Marines. A Chaos Space Marine is more powerful than a Space Marine. Hey, GW, fix your codexes, but...
Well, also, their vehicles should be wildly better, mm-hmm. because they are the same, except for they have PEDs like no one's ever had PEDs before. Mm. I took your dreadnought, your walker, your tank. What did I do? I chained a demon to it. You're like, what does that do? It's pretty goddamn good. Mm-hmm. It juices them up like no one's business. Also, when he shows up out of this vault, he shows people how much better they are, because he puts a whooping on everybody that's around for no real reason besides to just kind of show them
how powerful I am.
Right. He shows up with all these weapons and just murder shits everybody within a 10-mile radius of him.
And so Mars now is in a full revolution. To go what we were saying earlier, this is why Mortarion and Fulgrim and Petarabo were all supposed to be going to Mars right away, because we need to help out there.
Solve this shit to right away. This problem. Because it's not even just like this half is this and this half of this. It's more like we've shattered Mars into 70 factions.
Yeah.
And they're all fighting individually across the planet amongst themselves. And also, a lot of them don't know why they're fighting. They just know I'm getting attacked.
Yeah. So Mars, this is why I wanted to talk about this, because Mars is now falling apart. And Rogel Dorn, whose job it is to protect the solar system, now has a problem because the third planet from the sun is Earth. The fourth is Mars. So you now have a planet very close to Terra that is basically in full revolt, borderline chaos. But this planet produces
Titans. All of your shit.
So Rogel Dorn, you can't just go conquer it because Rogel Dorn then has to drop a blockade. So Rogel Dorn has now built a blockade around the solar system, layering it all the way towards Terra, and has a separate blockade around Mars. So this is working in Horus's favor quite a bit. He's now really starting to stretch the resources thin within
Terra. Which they also can't choose a side on Mars, by the way, because they actually... Mars doesn't have a clear victor. Mars also doesn't have clear factions.
Oh, Mars is just an anarchy.
It's just a shit show because it's not just chaos versus loyalist. It's Dark Mechanicum type people versus other people versus semi-people loyalist versus individual factions that were all excited about having a faction, basically, which is why you have all the AdMech stuff of Lucius and Mars and everything else kind of thing. All these split into these wild splinter factions, and it's just going to shit on Mars. Yeah,
Mars is just completely falling apart. But the last piece I want to set before we go into the invasion of Terra is cultists. And I think this is important. Brad and I were actually discussing this earlier. It's important to go over this because we talk a lot about the Space Marine on Space Marine action. And now we've covered a little bit
That's the movie action. The real action is happening with the untold trillions of people throughout the, it's actually more.
Yeah.
Throughout the Imperium that are we were actually talking about this at lunch. Mm-hmm. We will do a full episode of this, what's going on in the Imperium, but like it's a real thing that it's fairly easily for the Chaos Gods to go, hey man, your life sucks. Would you like your life to suck less? And they're like, I would like to do anything but put this widget into this hole for 16 hours a day and have a dude beat me. Actually, it's not even a dude. Have a machine beat me over the head every time I'm not fast enough putting the widget into the hole.
So let's dive into like cultists. And the note I gave here is classic sci-fi where there's always people who are on the side of the demons. I mean, I can name more movies than I should.
They just want to be bad. They want to be, they are lured. People with shitty lives are easily strayed to your life can be better. How better? Don't worry about it. It's just going to be better.
It's better than it is today.
Right.
And so now what you have is from a chaos god, we've discussed this before, the chaos gods are fed by whatever it is they care about happening a lot. So
killing, disease, excess, basically forbidden knowledge.
Forbidden knowledge. And these things are all growing. So the chaos gods are now able to start pushing out of the warp and more into the materium from the immaterium. They still need a body to go into, but it's possible. And we begin to see the long-term tragedy of the Horus Heresy is the immaterium and the materium begin to blend a little bit in the sense of the creatures of the immaterium now can reach into them.
It's the first time since the birth of Slaanesh, basically, that the creatures of the warp can manifest, not just possess. They've always been able to possess, manifest into the material plane because you have enough belief in whatever their thing is. Mm-hmm. And they start to have planets that are demonically incursioned planets where demons can literally physically be when they never could before.
Now, along with Horus, you know, Horus himself and his legions converting people over, gods of chaos are actually doing it here and there. And you're getting what the game calls cultists. For those who don't know what these are, these are just people who believe fervently in one of the chaos gods. They worship them. They will sacrifice themselves. They will kill for them, whatever it is. These are, instead of being a space marine fighting for a chaos god, this is a dude who used to work in a factory. Yeah, Tim.
Tim that used to sweep the halls, literally just made a bloodthirster show up next to you.
And I want to bring these guys up because they're a very important element to the invasion of the soul system. The Horus has his legions, but he needs more than just that. He needs bodies to throw at it.
And I will give you one of your notes, which is so spot on. The Emperor was wildly wrong.
Yeah.
Like wildly wrong. Because the Emperor's plan in his shitty British, distant British dad plan was that he was not going to acknowledge that chaos existed. And if he didn't acknowledge chaos existed, they wouldn't have power. And the problem was, is that the exact opposite happened, which is people weren't ready for chaos. Societies, the ruling parties, people in charge didn't know chaos existed. So they weren't ready for cultist infections.
Up here, because they don't know what this is. I mean, you're trying to solve an infection of a virus that you don't know exists. It's basically impossible. So the universe for the Imperium is beginning to burn. Even in worlds Horus isn't directly touching because of chaos. So it's everything's kind of falling apart all over the place.
Like laughably. And the thing is that because of warp storms, which we talked about a little bit a couple episodes ago, there's warp storms everywhere. So we have disconnection between worlds, between systems, between everything. There's little communication back and forth. There's a lot of disinformation between system to system. So they don't know what's going on.
We'll stop here. And we're going to get ready for our next episode, which is probably our final episode in this series. Not the series. Don't worry. We're not going anywhere. So it'll be our final episode in the Horus Heresy, which will be the invasion of the soul system in Terra. At this stage, the doors are open to Terra. Horus now has his shot. His legions are now led by demon princes. He's got Mars on his side. Things are looking pretty good for Horus. And the Emperor's side, he's got Rogel Dorn, 3 Space Marine chapters, the Custodes, Sisters of Silence. Now he has some Titans and every single citizen of Earth armed with a las gun. But, you know, he's got some stuff. But Horus is coming. And we're going to get to this culmination.
And they know that Horus is coming.
Yeah, they know it. They know it's coming. And as soon as he gets there, it's going to be go time. So next episode, we're going to cover the culmination of Horus's traitor rebellion. Who does he win? I think we can all figure that one out. Or does the Emperor win? You're going to have to tune in if you want to find out about
Guys. It's called the Horus Heresy.
You guys could just Google the results, but I'm just saying you could let us tell you the story.
Or we could talk about it.
Exactly. So with that, please like and subscribe. Also, please join our Discord and our Facebook. We have a lot of engagement there.
We'd love to have some feedback. We're always learning. We're hoping. We're in episode 7?
7.
We're hoping by double digits that we'll actually know what the hell we're doing. Yeah. But it's going to take you guys to let us know.
Yeah,
because we can fix things.
After our next episode, we're going to move into a much less linear path, and we'd like to have a lot more interaction with you guys as to how we're going to do that. So, but with that, I am John Barsadi. This is Brad Chester.
This guy.
Thank you so much.